Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Fair Housing Act and Proximate Causation Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On May 1st, 2017, the Supreme Court decided Bank of America Corp. v. City of Miami, which was consolidated with Wells Fargo & Company v. City of Miami. In this case, the City of Miami sued Bank of America Corporation and similar defendants under the Fair Housing Act, arguing that the banks engaged in predatory lending practices that targeted minorities for higher risk loans, which resulted in high rates of default and caused financial harm to the city. Miami also alleged that the banks unjustly enriched themselves by taking advantage of benefits conferred by the city, thus denying the city expected property and tax revenues. The district court dismissed the FHA claims and held that Miami did not fall within the zone of interest the statute was meant to protect, and therefore lacked standing under the statute. The court also held that Miami had not adequately shown that the bank's conduct was the proximate cause of the harms the city claimed to have suffered. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit reversed, holding that FHA standing extends as broadly as Article 3 of the Constitution permits, that Miami had established Article 3 standing here, and that it had sufficiently alleged proximate causation. By a vote of 5-3, the Supreme Court vacated the judgment of the 11th Circuit and remanded the case. In an opinion by Justice Breyer, the court held that 1. The City of Miami was an aggrieved person authorized to bring suit under the FHA, and 2. The 11th Circuit erred in concluding that the city's complaints met the FHA's proximate cause requirement based solely on the finding that the city's alleged financial injuries were a foreseeable result of the bank's misconduct. Proximate cause under the FHA requires some direct relation between the injury asserted and the injurious conduct alleged. The lower court should define, in the first instance, the contours of proximate cause under the FHA and decide on remand how that standard applies to the city's claims for lost property tax revenue and increased municipal expenses. Justice Breyer's majority opinion was joined by the Chief Justice and Justices Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Thomas filed an opinion concurring in part and dissenting in part. It was Justices Kennedy and Alito joined. Justice Gorsuch took no part in the consideration or decision of the cases. To discuss the case, we have Thea Brooke Knight, who is Associate Director of Financial Regulation Studies at the Cato Institute. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Knight.
In Bank of America v. Miami, the Supreme Court considered who has standing under the Fair Housing Act, or FHA. The decision was a partial win for the city, but ultimately handed the baton back to the lower court, instructing the 11th Circuit to reconsider its definition of proximate cause. The City of Miami claimed that Bank of America and Wells Fargo discriminated against minority homebuyers, steering them into more expensive mortgages with less favorable terms than were offered to similar white borrowers. The result, the city claimed, was that foreclosures and vacancies were higher in minority neighborhoods. According to Miami, this harmed the city in two ways. First, the city was obliged to spend more on municipal services aimed at reducing urban blight and addressing unsafe and dangerous conditions that result from concentrated vacancies. Second, the city claims it lost tax revenue due both to the decreased value of the houses in foreclosure and the impact those foreclosures had on the values of surrounding homes. It's important to note that at this stage, whether the banks actually discriminated against borrowers is not part of the inquiry. This is an appeal of the lower court's rulings on the bank's motion to dismiss. There's been no trial and no evidence presented at this point. The question was simply whether the city had standing to bring a claim under the FHA based on the harms that it has alleged. The FHA forbids discrimination in the rental or sale of housing and permits any, quote, aggrieved person to bring a suit to enforce the law. At issue in this case was the meaning of aggrieved person. The court in the past has found that a plaintiff's harm must arguably fall within the zone of interests the statute seeks to protect. The extent of that zone of interests has not been entirely clear in the case law. Of course, if a landlord refuses to rent to a prospective tenant because of the tenant's race, that tenant is an aggrieved person. That's a very clear case, and there's no serious dispute that freedom from such sort of exclusion is squarely within the FHA's zone of interests. But the FHA has been found to go beyond remedying just the harm to that prospective tenant. the zone of interest the courts found includes not just protecting someone from being the subject of racial discrimination, but also preventing more diffuse harms arising from discrimination, including effects such as increased segregation in housing. So, for example, in Traficante v. Metropolitan Life Insurance Company, existing tenants of an apartment complex successfully brought a claim under the FHA alleging that racial discrimination against respective tenants had deprived them of the benefits of living in a racially integrated environment. The court has also found previously that municipalities can be aggrieved persons under the law. In Gladstone Realtors v. Village of Bellwood, the court found that the village itself had standing to claim harm similar to those alleged by the Traficante plaintiffs. That is, that racial steering had deprived the village of the kind of racial integration that the FHA seeks to protect. What distinguishes Bank of America v. Miami is the fact that the city's alleged harms have been purely financial. The city claims it must spend more money for urban blight. It claims it has lost money in revenue. It has not claimed, for example, that it has become less diverse, or that people have moved out of the city or have opted not to move into the city because of race. While this was the subject of some discussion at argument, the court did not explicitly address it in its opinion. The court ruled that the city's harms were arguably within the zone of interest intended to be protected under the FHA. Implicitly, it therefore did rule that financial harms, such as those that the city alleged, are sufficient. The court did not grant Miami a full victory, however. One of the knottiest problems this case presented was how to draw a line that could include Miami, but exclude every party that could claim any harm from the fallout from foreclosures. So at oral argument, for example, Justice Sotomayor asked whether a gardener could recover by claiming that he had fewer clients now that more houses were vacant or in foreclosure. The Chief Justice asked whether the utility company could recover on similar grounds. In the end, the court expressly declined to consider the gardener or the utility company in its opinion. The court noted that, quote, "The banks say it would be similarly far-fetched if restaurants, plumbers, utility companies, or any other participant in a local economy could sue the banks to recover business they lost when people had to give up their homes and leave the neighborhood as a result of the bank's discriminatory lending practices." End quote. However, the court concluded, quote, "We need not discuss the bank's argument at length, for even if we assume for argument's sake that some form of it is valid, we nonetheless conclude that the city's financial industries fall within the zone of interest that the FHA protects," end quote. This is not the end of the inquiry, however, because the issue before the court was twofold. First, do the harms alleged fall within the FHA's zone of interest? And to that question, the court answered yes. But second, was the alleged discrimination the proximate cause of the harms alleged? And to this question, the court answered, not sure. So, in ruling for the city, the 11th Circuit held that because the harms alleged by the city were foreseeable, if the alleged discrimination had occurred, the discrimination could be said to be the proximate cause. The Supreme Court disagreed, saying, quote, "We conclude that the 11th Circuit erred in holding that foreseeability is sufficient to establish proximate cause under the FHA. As we have explained, proximate cause generally bars suits for alleged harm that is too remote from the defendant's unlawful conduct." Given how intertwined housing is with economic and social life, the court found that mere foreseeability was insufficient in this context. It cannot be under this understanding that anyone harmed by foreclosures can bring a claim, even if the harm can be traced to the foreclosures and even if it was foreseeable that that harm might occur. At oral argument, Justice Breyer, who wrote the opinion for the majority, asked whether a real estate journalist living in Alaska could recover under the FHA, assuming that the journalist could clearly show that foreclosures in Miami had a deleterious effect on the journalist's ability to earn money writing about the real estate market. It would be reasonably foreseeable that such a journalist would be impacted by these foreclosures. But is this effect too many steps removed for the journalist to have standing? The court didn't definitively say, and it in fact expressly declined to answer that question. because the 11th Circuit had not considered the question beyond asserting that the harm is foreseeable, and because the precise question of what constitutes proximate causation under the FHA has not been considered by any lower court, the Supreme Court instead instructed the lower courts to, quote, define in the first instance the contours of proximate cause under the FHA and decide how that standard applies to the city's claims for lost property tax revenue and increased municipal expenses, end quote. By way of guidance, the court provided only fairly vague guidelines. It said, the general tendencies in these cases, in regard to damages at least, is to not go beyond the first step. What falls within that first step depends in part on the nature of the statutory cause of action and an assessment of what is administratively possible and convenient. There is no doubt that the ruling overall is something of a win for the city. It is, however, a very limited win. The real outcome of the case will depend on how the lower court defines proximate cause. It is unlikely that any court will define it so broadly as to include the Alaskan journalist. Justice Thomas, dissenting in part but concurring in the court's ruling on proximate cause, expressed little hope that Miami would ultimately prevail, stating that the majority opinion leaves little doubt that neither Miami nor any similarly situated plaintiff can satisfy the rigorous standard for proximate cause that the court adopts, and leaves the Court of Appeals to apply. End quote. He goes on to enumerate four or five steps between the bank's alleged conduct and the harm the city claims, illustrating the fact that these harms are well beyond the first step recommended by the majority. Miami's case is not unique. There have been a number of municipalities that have filed similar claims seeking to recover damages arising from the housing crisis in 2007 and 2008. Although this case establishes that plaintiffs may assert a purely economic harm as the grounds for an FHA claim, the viability of claims based on similarly attenuated causal chains is shakier than it once was.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.fedsoc.org/multimedia.